Yazare.
Miawezo.
Yambi. And welcome to another episode of Africa's Untold Stories.
Yeah, lucky number 13.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's true, it's 13. Oh, right, 13. Welcome. Yeah, sure, welcome. We're recording on Friday, it's 13, but it's not Friday the 13th,
I know.
Unfortunately.
It would have been epic if it was. Sad.
Today's episode, we are going to, last time we said we're going to Central Africa.
Yeah.
And yeah, so that's where we are now. And if by some chance, one in several million or billion, you are someone who understands the Kikongo languages, then you know what we're talking about next when I say Yambi.
Yeah.
We are going to talk about the Kingdom of Congo.
Okay. And yes. what's the episode title?
Right. Today's episode is The Kingdom of Congo, A Lesson in the Dark Side of Opportunity.
Oof. Sounds ominous.
Yeah. It's like a really good story that starts taking unnecessary and unfortunate twists and turns.
Oh.
It's kind of like Game of Thrones. I don't watch Game of Thrones. I didn't watch it, but you know, the way you guys were all pissed about how all of a sudden everything was going to crap.
See, do not mention season 8. We all unanimously agreed season 8 didn't happen. Okay. Thank you.
But yeah, so essentially that's kind of like what the Kingdom of Congo.
I think I have to, you know, call a therapist after we record this episode as well. I mean.
Right. Okay. So,
so the dark side of opportunity.
Yes, dark side of opportunity, Kingdom of Congo.
Okay, so we're starting with the kingdom itself, right?
Yeah.
So when was it formed?
Right, so the Kingdom of Congo was established around the latter part of the 1300s.
1300s? That's
yes.
A long time.
Yeah, it's a long time. 1300s, wow. A long time. The exact date is not known.
Mm-hmm.
But the kingdom was established around that period, late 1300s. Some estimates put it around the 1390s.
Okay. By who?
The kingdom. Okay. So, right. Let me explain the origin of the kingdom of Congo.
Yeah. Definitely.
The kingdom was formed by a Kikongo speaking population.
Okay.
Right, so the Kikongo speakers were a group of Bantu speaking population,
wow.
Obviously, because Central Africa,
uh-huh.
Who settled around the area in modern day Gabon, Congo, DRC, with Democratic Republic of Congo. If you're new to Africa, we have two Congos.
Yes.
So both Congos and Angola.
Okay.
The Kikongo speaking population settled around these areas. And at some point in the 1300s, two powerful clans, they had their own kingdoms. They came together, two of their leaders came together.
Oh.
So they set the foundation for what will become the Kingdom of Congo.
Okay. So these two kingdoms, smaller kingdoms, I'm guessing, merged to form the foundation of what is the Kingdom of Congo.
Right. Yes. So,
Hold on. Let me clarify. Kikongo is the language.
Yes. Kikongo is the language.
But Congo is the kingdom.
Yes. Congo is the kingdom. The kingdom's name was extracted from the language.
I see. Okay. So moving on.
Yes. So, these two leaders, they got married, a man and a woman.
One was a female leader.
Yeah, well, the traditions I've seen at least don't go so much into detail as whether she was actually the queen or she was just a high-ranking member of the family or whatever.
Oh, okay.
Or next in line to throne or whatever.
Okay.
But essentially, the story is that this lady, Nima'a Nzima, got married to the man, Lukeni Luanze.
Okay.
No, sorry. Lukeni Luansanze.
Luansanze.
Yes.
Disclaimer for anyone whose name we may have butchered, but then. Yeah. Okay. So it was through marriage that
it was formed.
Two
yeah. And their son, would become the king of United Congo, Lukini Luanimi.
Lukini
Luanimi.
Okay.
Yeah, so he's recorded as the first king of Congo by oral tradition.
Okay.
Yeah, so this is believed to have happened around the late 1300s. So officially, the Kingdom of Congo has come into being.
Okay. And yes. Then, okay, so now we know who the first ruler of the kingdom is.
Yeah.
And then, let me see, did they have a capital? Because, I mean, it's two kingdoms joining. So, where was the seat of the
capital? The tradition states that when they came together, they formed the kingdom. Lukini Luanimi was the first king.
Okay.
And so, when you look at it, some people sometimes refer to Congo as a confederation.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was more of different kingdoms or states coming together to form one particular one. Yeah, and so when that happened, the Lukini Luanimi became the ruler of the United Congo. And he created a capital at a place called Mbansa, Congo.
Mbansa, Congo.
Mbansa.
Mbansa, Congo.
Mbansa, Congo.
Okay.
Yes, which meant, what you call it? Residence of the king.
Oh, I mean, that's simple enough.
Yeah, they had a thing for that. Like, if there was where a village chief lived or a governor or the king, then they call it the Mbansa, whoever it is.
Okay.
So it's like residence of this person.
I see. So Mbansa means resident.
Something like that. Not direct translation, but it has that connotation. Okay,
that sort of connotation.
Yeah.
Wait, exactly. You said the capital was Mbansa, Congo.
Mbansa, Congo, yes.
That sort of makes it look like Congo means king, but then let's go on.
Yeah, it's not a direct.
Yeah, not directly, not, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so that was the capital. And then, so about how many people made up this new United Congo?
Congo was, the population was huge. Initially, the population was somewhere in the hundreds of thousands.
Wow.
But over time, they would, after the confederation is formed, they'd go conquering other parts of surrounding areas to expand their territory.
Okay.
So eventually, somewhere around the late 1600s, the population of Congo was well into the millions, couple of millions.
Okay, I see. So it means they came together, they had the might of a combined army.
Yeah.
Which helped them conquer more states.
Yeah. Yeah. So Congo would rapidly rise to become the most powerful kingdom in that portion of the continent, which is the central western portion of the continent.
Okay.
Right now. So if you come down from Gabon, between Gabon and, Congo, and then Congo, part, just a small portion of Congo, and then a significant portion of DR Congo, and then a large portion of the northern part of Angola.
Okay.
That was where the kingdom would exist.
I see. Yes. So, I mean, you've mentioned wars, as in how they grew.
Yeah.
But then what about the people, the people themselves? What were they engaged in?
Right. So Congo would gain a lot of wealth through trade.
Okay.
In ivory, copper, and everyone's favorite commodity at this time in the world, slaves.
Oh, wow. I see. That took a dark turn very quickly.
Okay. Yeah. Congo's economy was strong. And although, I should mention though, although they did trade in slaves like most parts of the world at this point in time, like most parts of Africa, this slave trade was different to what
the West.
Yes, the West would introduce eventually.
I see.
Congo's slave trade was largely based on people who were prisoners of war. And criminals or debtors who didn't pay their debts. So you become like a slave to the person who you owe the debt to.
Okay. Yes. So it's more humane.
It was still slavery, but I guess.
Yeah, I mean. Okay. So, and you mentioned copper and a couple other things.
Yeah.
Were they mined in the state, or it was just, the state was a trading point? Because they're positioned...
Right.
It looks like they would facilitate trade between the southern part of Africa and then the higher ups.
It was both. They mined and they, what do you call it? served as a transit point.
Okay.
Both of them, because they were close to the coast.
Mm-hmm.
So if the foreigners come later, okay, it's kind of like a spoiler, but later on the Portuguese and some Europeans will show up.
Hold on. I know this might be a spoiler, but you know there's never a story without the British. Did the British make an appearance?
Yes, please. The British will make an appearance.
Okay. Class record still going strong. Okay. So with all this trade, they must have had like a means to exchange their goods, right? Like a currency.
Yes. Did they have a writing? Right. Let me go a bit into how Congo worked.
Okay. Yeah.
So Congo was, like I said, it was a kingdom, but it was also more of a confederation.
Mm-hmm.
So the king had governors under him.
Okay.
Right. The governors ruled each. They each had their own province that they ruled.
Mm-hmm.
And then under the governors, there were lesser lords. And under the lesser lords, there were the hereditary chiefs.
Wow.
So okay. If you say you go to a small town or village, there's a chief there who mm-hmm. inherited a position of title from his father.
Mm-hmm.
He reports to a lord who reports to the governor who reports to the king.
The king, okay.
Yes.
So there's a pretty well-defined hierarchy.
Yes.
Okay.
And initially at this point, the governors were, even though they were appointed by the king, they were not necessarily people who were close to the king. But over time, the rulers of Congo would start to pick only people who were very close and loyal to them. So that way they centralized power. So when Congo was initially formed, it wasn't a very centralized state. But as it went on, because the kings picked people who were directly loyal to them,
mm-hmm.
they centralized power.
The power, okay.
Yes.
But that didn't cause any rifts in their relations with the particular states they were dealing with?
No, not necessarily. See, the person who is ruling the state is appointed by the king, and the king's power is respected. The king was not an absolute authority, but his power was very much respected.
Okay.
In fact, the king was actually seen as, well, not the king himself, but the position of the king
mm-hmm.
was seen as a very special position. He was called the Nzambi Mpungu. That was one of the king's titles.
Nzambi Mpungu.
Yes.
That sounds powerful. What does it mean?
Superior spirit.
Aye, spirit.
Yes.
Okay.
So like, yeah. So the king was, he was, that was how, but although they didn't see the king himself as that, they saw the position as that.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yes.
So, right. I'm moving on to link that to your question.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that's like the political aspect of how it was run.
Okay.
Then, socially, of course, they had different classes like everyone, every mm-hmm. other kingdom, the royals, the warriors, the farmers, and the miners, craftsmen, artisans.
And then the traders.
And the slaves.
And the slaves, yes.
I should mention at this point in time, Congo wasn't, even though they traded in slaves, it wasn't a slave-dependent economy. That would come later on in there.
Okay. Yes. Okay.
So, eventually at this point, at this point, the currency.
Mm-hmm.
So, Congo traded with what they called, we call them shells, like cowrie shells.
Okay.
That they got from the island of, they got from Luanda.
Oh.
In, off of modern day Angola.
Okay.
So they got the shells from there, and then they used them as currency in the kingdom. However, the currency was controlled by the royals, the king. The king controlled the influx of the currency.
Okay.
And they called them Nzimbu.
Nzimbu.
Yes. Okay. And they could use them to exchange for goods and services. Mm-hmm. So, for example, 100 Nzimbu would buy a hen, and mm-hmm. 2,000 would buy a goat.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so they had a proper monetary system going on.
That seems very well defined so far. Like,
yeah, Congo is a very well defined kingdom, especially because late at some point in its history, around the 1400s,
mm-hmm.
Congo will come into contact with the Portuguese.
Ah.
And when that happens, the Portuguese, they like to write. So they write a lot of stuff about what goes on in Congo and how it works. And remember, this is before the European influence begins in Congo.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point in time, they are writing a lot of data about how the Congolese operate and how their structures work and stuff like that.
Okay.
And it's interesting stuff.
Yeah, wow. And wait, so did they have their own, you know, writing?
No, Congo themselves did not write.
Okay.
The writing was introduced with the arrival of the Portuguese.
Okay. Yeah. That makes sense then. And then how about their culture? Because to have a group of people that, like, I mean, two groups of people come together. So it means there has to be a merging of culture somewhere. Plus the influence of trading outside of the Confederation or the United Congo, like we are calling them.
Right.
I mean, how did that influence their culture? The merger, the trade, everything?
Well, the people were not that different, actually.
Oh,
the people
okay.
who come together to form a Congo.
Okay, so it's not like different. Two vastly different people.
No, it's not like two one. Vastly different people becoming
oh,
one.
I see. Yeah,
it's two similar people merging.
Okay.
To, yes.
But then, and the, so what about prior to the Europeans' arrival? Did they have like a religion?
Yeah, they had their own religion, which was ancestral worship and worshiping spirits and certain gods as well.
That makes sense because the title they give the king.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
So, well, you've mentioned the Portuguese a lot.
Right.
Should we jump straight there or do you have anything else to add before we go to that point?
Yeah, so there was one also interesting aspect about how Congo was run.
Okay.
The king ruled with a council of 12 members. Four of them were people who were sort of elected,
uh-huh.
sort of. And there were another four who were directly appointed by the king.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, the other four, not necessarily directly appointed by the king, but like positions that the king has given to people, the palace lord, the treasurer, the prime minister, and a very important judge.
Okay.
And then there was another four positions given to the four most important women in the kingdom.
Oh.
The king's paternal aunt, the great wife of the king, and then the other two were either the widowed queen mm-hmm. or and a matriarch from one of the important clans.
Wow. Well, so women were actually involved in governance.
Yeah, women were involved in governance as
that
well.
That is refreshing to know. That is refreshing to know.
Yeah. All right. So, yeah, you asked about the Portuguese.
Yeah.
The Portuguese arrived in 1482.
1482, okay.
Oh, it's 83. It's 82, I believe. Yes.
So, about after a century after the...
After the kingdom itself okay. was formed. And when the Portuguese arrived, mm-hmm. Things were going well. And usually when the Europeans get somewhere, they want to convert people to Christianity. It's
yeah.
kind of tough for them to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But when they got there and they had good relations, for some reason, it's not well known, the ruler of Congo at this point in time,
mm-hmm.
a king by the name Nzinga A Nkubu.
Nzinga
A Nkubu, yes.
Okay.
He willingly and easily converted to Christianity along with his son.
Okay.
So Nzinga would so when they do that they adopt Portuguese names as well.
Hmm.
So Nzinga and Kuo become João the First.
João.
João, João. I don't know how it's pronounced. It's Portuguese.
Wait, spell it.
J O A O. It's A with like that funny thingy
oh,
on the top.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay. So like João, whatever.
Yeah, João the First.
Sorry to any of them named that out there. You could send an audio of how your name is pronounced. Right.
Yeah, and his son would be baptized as Afonso the First.
Alfonso?
No, not Alfonso. Afonso.
Afonso. Okay.
Yes, Afonso the First.
Okay.
So, but the funny thing is not long after João converted to Christianity, or okay, maybe I guess it was kind of long, mm-hmm. Later on in his life, he renounced Christianity for some reason when he's old and then he dies.
Hey, that is
But yeah, so he died and then his son Afonso took over.
Mm-hmm.
And I should point this, Congo's system was not directly hereditary. It's not, although, like I said, with the village chiefs, it's like hereditary and all those mm-hmm. things. But with the title of king mm-hmm. of Congo, it was not direct. The son is not automatically the heir of the father.
Okay.
The heirs appointed by council.
The same 12 council people?
No, not necessarily. It's an influence. So Congo has this, or had this thing of factions and various clans.
Okay.
And unfortunately, that would come in later and play a role in their downfall. It played a role in their formation, a key role in their formation. Remember the intermarriage thingy, mm-hmm. the confederation thing I mentioned about the beginning?
Yeah.
Yes, but that will affect them negatively towards the end as well.
Oh.
But for now, let's continue with that. So the it wasn't hereditary,
mm-hmm.
you know, not father, son, not directly. So Afonso himself had to contest for the position of king with his half-brother.
Okay.
But in the end, he would become successful, and then he would become the king.
That is strange.
The details of the what happened are not written down or transferred. Yeah. Okay.
But I find that strange, especially because the meaning they give to the title of their king, right?
Yeah.
Him converting to Christianity, it didn't ruffle any...
Right. That's a good question. So the king was... Congo... When the king converted to Christianity,
mm-hmm.
the funny thing was, it's not, you know, when we discussed like Mansa Musa
yeah.
and then the Aksumites, initially it was just the nobles and
mm-hmm.
important people who converted to these Abrahamic religions.
Yeah.
That was exactly the same thing with Congo.
Okay.
So it was just when,
the royals.
Yeah, it was just royals and very high ranking nobles who converted. And even when they converted, they didn't just... abandoned their religion, their
okay.
ancestral religion.
Mm-hmm.
They sort of mixed it with the Christianity.
Oh, I see.
Much to the ire of the Portuguese bishops. Because they say they're Christians, but then they're still doing certain things that,
uh-huh.
you know, the Bible would frown on.
Okay.
Yeah. So the people themselves, the common folk, they were not particularly, well... There, although we don't know exactly how they felt, there isn't any record of any sort of revolt or, you know, anything like that for the king converting, nothing of that sort.
I mean, I guess it makes sense, because if they are still practicing some things that the common folks do,
it wouldn't entirely bother them.
It wouldn't bother them as much. Yeah. Okay, maybe this Christianity is a rich people thing that they're adding to our current practices.
Yeah. Okay. That's also one thing that some scholars think that the Congolese, when they initially accepted Christianity, they just saw it like as another cult worship of sorts, so like adopting it into their own.
I see.
So most of them looks like weren't entirely bothered by that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he contests with his half-brother.
Yeah, Afonso becomes king.
Mm-hmm.
And Afonso, unlike his father, was actually, he tried to be at least a devout Christian. So he actually claimed as part of how he became king that he had a vision from the Saint James and Virgin Mary that helped him defeat his half-brother to become king.
I see.
Yeah. And so he'd become king, and he promotes Christianity in the kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Oh, and I should mention, one of the oldest churches in Africa is actually located in the old kingdom of Congo, modern day Angola.
Really?
Yeah, and built in the 1500s.
Wow. Yeah, so very, I'm guessing the only other church older than it might be in Aksum somewhere.
Yeah, the only other church older is probably in Aksum or Egypt, one of them.
I see.
Or Algeria. Algeria also has Christian history, so it's possible that it's Algeria.
We need to hear Algeria one day.
Yeah.
Okay.
So unfortunately for Afonso, it was during his reign that things with the Portuguese started to go sour.
Wow.
Yeah. It didn't keep long at all.
Right.
I mean, well, that's where the lesson comes in.
Okay.
So from this point on, we are going to start sprinkling the lesson about a bit.
I see.
So the lesson is dark side of opportunity.
Yep.
So when the Portuguese arrived, right, what they brought with them was an entire new market for the Congolese, and Congo was already a trading empire.
Yeah.
So that was a huge benefit for them. They sold crafts, ivory, all sorts of goodies to the Portuguese. Yes, slaves included. Now, although the Portuguese were not the only ones that the Congolese came into contact with, there were the French and the Dutch, but the Portuguese were the main ones who were there, and they were the main trading partners.
I see.
And so when the Portuguese met them initially, everything was good. And then they started trading in slaves as well.
Mm-hmm.
But then something happened. The Portuguese were sending their slaves to the Americas, right?
Okay.
Starting new colonies in Brazil,
mm-hmm.
where they built thousands of plantations, and then they needed a lot of labor to be able to
harvest. I see.
Yes. The issue with this was that the plantations were very big and the slaves were dying way too fast.
Whoa.
In fact, I actually don't remember the specifics, but the lifespan of the average slave in Brazil was much shorter than the average slave in the USA.
Whoa.
Like, significantly shorter.
Wait, as in, are we talking about the same African slaves?
Same African slaves. If you go to US, you are more likely to live long than if you go to Brazil. Like, the slaves that were taken to Brazil, most of them didn't even see old age, presumably if they were not old before they were taken.
What could be responsible for that? Is it because Brazil has, like, rainforests with a lot of things that could kill you? Or
no, the conditions because were just worse? They were overworked. Oh. They were very worse. They were making them do all sorts of work, barely sleeping, eating. So they were dying at a rapid pace. I mean, it didn't occur to them that, you know, perhaps if we treat them well and let them live longer, we wouldn't need to be bringing in so many slaves.
Yes. I mean, who was making decisions for these people?
So eventually the demand kept going up for slaves. But here was the thing. Congo already had a slave system before the Portuguese arrived.
Okay.
And they had legal and illegal means of, slave trade.
Oh.
You could not sell someone who was born a Congolese citizen unless, like I said, criminal or debtor.
Mm-hmm.
However, those criminals and debtors, you can't sell them to someone who was not Congolese.
Hey.
Yes.
Okay.
But then here comes in the point, because the Portuguese are not able to meet their demand for slaves, they start invading.
Ah.
So not necessarily invading like taking an army, but they raid Congolese villages and towns and capture slaves, or they get other noblemen to do those sort of dirty work for them.
Uh-huh.
And they bring the slaves onto the ships and stuff. So the king finds out, Afonso, and he gets pissed and he's like, y'all should stop doing that. And then he writes to the Portuguese king to complain about this as well, but
mm-hmm.
nothing is done.
Really?
Yeah. So this slave problem would go on for a while, and later on,
mm-hmm.
Afonso would pass away, and then he'd be succeeded by a certain guy who was called Diogo.
Diogo?
Diogo the First. And he cut off relations with Portugal because of the whole thing they were doing.
Yeah, because they weren't really complying by the agreements they had, I guess.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
When Diogo passed out, he had a good reign. He passed on. Then the Portuguese replaced. So the Diogo's successor, his name is not recorded, but I presume it was very short reign because the Portuguese killed him.
Oh.
Yeah, they helped a bunch of people kill him, and then they replaced him with another king, Afonso II. But the people didn't like that, so there was a whole bunch of riots. Afonso was killed, and then he was replaced by another king.
Of course.
Yeah, Bernardo I. And then eventually one king will come to power by the name Alvaro Nimi Alukini Lua Mvemba.
Oh, holy.
Yeah,
holy.
Alvaro I for short.
Okay, let's go with
that. During his reign, Alvaro I, mm-hmm. he allowed the Portuguese to establish a colony south of the kingdom,
mm-hmm.
in one of the provinces, Ndongo.
Okay.
The reason was that Congo would be invaded by a bunch of mysterious people that were simply called the Jaga. Now, as to who they are, it's not entirely certain. Some think it was an intern or something, one faction in Congo, or maybe some angry peasants joined forces with one faction, or some outsiders joined mm-hmm. faction with them. But essentially, they really disturbed the kingdom, and then they needed help to defeat them.
Okay.
So Alvaro signed a deal with the devil. He brought in the Portuguese to come and help them defeat. When it happened, then he gave the Portuguese a portion downstairs.
Okay.
In Ndongo. That's located in modern day Angola.
Okay.
Right. So Alvaro he tried to westernize Congo. He helped them to get more churches. He brought in more Western style titles like Duke and Marquis.
I have a feeling. Okay, so it's all based on the agreements he had.
No. He was doing this on his own volition.
Really?
Yeah, he was trying to westernize Congo.
More
Christianity stuff and, you know, things like that. And he also changed the name of the capital city to São Salvador.
São Salvador?
Yeah, São Salvador. Holy Savior in Portuguese. Yeah, so, but at this point in time, the relations with Portugal were not very good, though, because remember, because of the slave raiding thing. So, but they never actually confronted each other.
Yeah, that's the weirdest part. I mean, you're still adopting more of their things, too.
Yeah. And so, Afonso eventually passes on, but during that time, the Portuguese gave up with the demand for slave again. They keep raiding. Now they have a colony south of the kingdom.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then they keep raiding also parts of the kingdom's peripheries to capture more people and stuff like that.
Okay, I see.
Yeah, and then eventually one king by the name of Pedro II gets really pissed because the Portuguese take it a step too far. So he goes to war with them in 1622 and he defeats them.
Oh, yay. Thank
you. Yes, and then they reconcile. But he defeats them, but he doesn't expel them because he can't at that point in time. So he makes a deal with the Dutch. So he says that he'll pay the Dutch in gold and ivory if the Dutch come and they attack come with their fleets to attack the Portuguese while they attack the Portuguese on land and essentially just like expel them from that portion of the continent. But Pedro died. So Pedro died and his successor who happened to also be his son luckily did not do that. He did not go through with the plan with the Dutch because he said they are Catholics and they can't attack other Catholics with non-Catholics. The Dutch were not Catholic. So
the same Catholics were screwing them over and invading parts of lands they were not supposed to be.
Well.
Ah, good God. Okay. Let's go on.
Yeah.
So he didn't follow through with the plan.
He didn't follow through with the plan. And at this whole point in time, there's a whole bunch of royal politics and factions and nonsense that could be a really good TV show if you make it.
I can imagine.
There's a lot of that goes on and it results in wars with civil war, squabbling. They fight with the Dutch one or two times. They fight with the Portuguese like three times. And eventually, that all comes to a head to spark something which we know as the decline.
So they weren't exactly winning those fights.
Well, they did defeat like I mentioned, they defeated the Portuguese first. But the real kicker was also the civil wars that they were having.
Okay. So they're now dealing with internal and external battles.
Yes.
At the same time.
Yes. Congo would eventually start declining around the mid-1600s.
Okay.
And it would reduce to a shadow of itself. It would become very decentralized and the king would have very little power over the previous provinces and stuff like that. And by the 1700s, the king would really only control a very small portion. And by, what do you call it? By 1839, the British would outlaw slave trade.
Okay.
And they'd start patrolling, you know, coasts to make sure that people are not still trying to. So that would really affect the sale of slaves and that would affect the economy of Congo very badly.
So at this point, they were very slave dependent.
At this point, they were very slave dependent. See, their economy was not very slave dependent initially.
Yes, you mentioned that actually.
Yes. So in later on in the 1800s, 1884, Berlin Conference happened. And then Portugal was given the lion's share of what was then Congo.
Okay.
Which was large parts, which is in northern Angola now. And then so Portugal would get that. And then at that point in time, the Portuguese would help one guy who was vying for the throne of Congo. Like I mentioned, there's a lot of factions and infighting.
Yeah.
So someone can be a king and be like a king for like a month and then there would be like two people claiming to be kings.
Oh,
and like keep in mind all this while there was also this infighting. There was actually one rebellious province called Soyo, which was very powerful in its own right. And they actually even defeated the kingdom at a battle one point in time. Wow. So it's a whole bunch of dynastic politics and stuff like that. And so eventually this Pedro was held by the Portuguese to come to power, and the Portuguese make him sign a deal that makes Congo a vassal state. So Congo becomes a vassal state to Portugal, and eventually in 1914, Congo abolishes Portugal as a state and includes majority of it into what they had as their colony of Angola.
Okay.
Yes, the rest will go to the French and the Belgians.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Belgians.
Yeah, the Belgians. If you look at all of this, you can trace Congo's decline into five main causes. You can point out the slave trade,
mm-hmm.
The pressures of the slave trade.
Because
aside it's forcing the king, the people to try to meet demand, it actually affected how people saw the king and the royals. It wasn't the Christianity, it was the slave trade.
Yes.
Because the king is selling his own people. He's not able to, not selling. I mentioned that the king didn't sell the free people.
But he's not able to protect.
Yes, mm-hmm. He's not able to protect his people. So to the people, it's like, really?
I mean, we thought you were the...
Yeah,
what was that title again?
Spiritual... superior spirit.
Superior spirit who cannot protect us. I mean,
Is
that even someone we should follow?
So that played a role in their downfall, the battle with the Portuguese, their civil wars and faction in battle,
mm-hmm.
and then the wars with the other province that became independent, the Soyo.
The Soyo.
Yeah, those would play very key roles in crumbling the kingdom. Yes. So now let's move on, right?
Okay.
The lesson.
Yes, the lesson.
So the reason for the title, The Dark Side of Opportunity, Congo was, they dealt in slaves, all right.
Mm-hmm.
They sold a lot of stuff. Congo was not very dependent on one commodity until that one commodity just became...
Very high in demand.
Very high in demand.
Mm.
So they just kept trying and trying and trying to meet the demand. And that backfired. You see, for Congo to meet the supply of slaves, because they don't sell free Congolese to foreigners, they continued fighting wars.
To get more prisoners of war
to give to them. But then that didn't work out. So the Portuguese started slave raiding inside Africa and, mm-hmm. Conniving with a bunch of people to get more slaves. Now, as I mentioned earlier, this affected the legitimacy of the king in the people's eyes.
Mm-hmm.
First key to helping the downfall.
Mm-hmm.
And as that happened, manpower was also sent away from the Kingdom of Congo to other places.
Yes.
Second key to play a role in the downfall. Mm-hmm. And of course, as this is also happening, Congo is becoming overly reliant on
this
slave trade as compared to the other commodities.
Mm-hmm.
Third key to play a role in the downfall.
Mm-hmm.
Now, because of the slave trade, which was not being properly regulated by the king, different factions could connive with the Portuguese and grow wealthy on those things.
Mm-hmm.
That played a role in giving the Soyo power. It played a role in weakening the king because not every trade had to go through him anymore. So that also helped the factions gain more power.
And they also undermined the authority of the king in the eyes of the people.
So now four things we can trace to the overdependence of that, having to do with the whole slave trade meeting sort of thing. And that is really the dark side of that opportunity.
Yeah.
The Portuguese came with riches or promises of riches.
And a new market to trade.
Hmm. And the Congolese not truly understanding what was going on and only, focusing on themselves and not being properly united.
Yeah.
Ended up, falling for all of that stuff.
Man, this is sad.
So one thing you'd notice actually is that Congo's story is not very unique.
Yeah.
Congo's downfall as a result of over-reliance on one commodity is one that you can link to many African kingdoms that came into contact with the white man. It wasn't always just slaves.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when these people come into contact with the foreign powers, it sort of shook up their entire, systems,
mm-hmm.
because all of a sudden there is a huge opportunity to do so many things. When the mm-hmm. remember if we did the homie Amazons episode, they had a similar encounter with the French, mm-hmm. the slave trade thingy, and they became over reliant and it affected them.
Yes.
And another people we've done, the Zulus. Mm-hmm. When the Zulus came in, okay, this wasn't the Zulus specifically, let me take that out, but it was that whole portion of Southern Africa.
Yeah.
One of the reasons, you remember I mentioned that Mfecane and the shift from less deadly warfare to like massive blood, you know. Yep. And one of the reasons for that was, not the cause, but one of the reasons for that was the whole interaction with the foreigners and new opportunities to get more things to sell.
Mm-hmm.
So Congo was one example of that. You know, the dark side of all of these opportunities are the things you don't see coming.
Yeah, such a blooming kingdom.
Yeah, it would have been interesting to see because, you know. Okay, so that's it for today's episode of Africa's Untold Stories.
Mm-hmm. Let's compare this to like season 8 of Game of Thrones, and I can't tell which one is sadder.
Well, this is real life, so.
Yeah, this is sadder. Game of Thrones just made me angry. Like, I was just annoyed. But like, this is very sad.
Unfortunately for y'all.
Yeah, I love a good sad ending.
In the first place.
That sounds wrong. But like, at least this was a better told story than Game of Thrones. All right. So, where are we going next?
Yeah, so after today, next week, we are going to East Africa.
East?
Yeah, we're going east.
Hmm.
Yep, you'd find out where we're going soon. Okay. But yeah, we're going east to East Africa next episode.
All right. And we don't even have any corrections to make for this one.
I don't think so. I can't think of anything.
Yeah. Okay, perfect record begins with this episode. All right. So until next time, right?
Yes, thank you for joining us, and remember to follow us on Twitter at
@Africas_Untold S
and on Instagram @Africas_Untold Stories.
Yep.
Yeah, so right. Until next time, catch you later.
Peace.
Peace.